Hi, I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Hello and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 352. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today is Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Perry.
It's a lovely hairnet you have on today.
Sometimes you gotta wear them in the lab, yeah.
You know what? I always appreciate that about you, that you wear the hairnet, because sometimes you see these TikToker chemists and stuff on there, and not using proper safety stuff that you use in the lab.
Well, you don't always see a hairnet in the lab, but my lab is temporarily in a production space. And so in production for GMP, you got to wear the hairnet. You don't want to see your hairs all over the floor.
That's right. And if you're going to be making a grilled cheese sandwich there, you need it for that too.
Yep.
Of course, you can't make food in the lab, right? All right. Well, on today's show, we are going to cover a little review of what we've done in the year and our coming goals for the next year, but we're also going to answer some questions because we always like to answer questions, and we got a few good ones. What do we think of coenzyme Q10 as an anti-aging ingredient? Do depilatories make your hair grow more? Interesting. And do you really need to shower every day? And what does earwax have to do with any of that? But first, little chit chat. Valerie, you're just back from Christmas.
I am.
You just had a holiday here in the U.S. How did that go?
Well, it was pretty nice because I didn't do a lot. We had planned on seeing family, but honestly, the last 6 months have been insane for me. And we ended up having to work in the lab moving stuff in because that has been very delayed. So that's what we did. But it was nice. And we got Chinese food because that's pretty much what's open, at least in Dallas. I'm used to LA having coffee shops open and restaurants open.
Sure.
And we did our best to find something. But turns out not everywhere is LA. So we did Chinese food. What did you do?
Well, I went out to my sister's, and we had about 16 people there and played some games.
All Romanowski brothers and sisters? I know you come from a large Polish family.
There are seven of us, and so, and a bunch of them have reproduced, so there's a lot of nieces and nephews, too. I'm not one who's reproduced, at least as far as I know. Hello. No, it was a good time. And then the next night we went to Wisconsin. And,
oh, wow.
On the my wife's side of the family. And they had all these games set up to play, like bounce the ping pong ball into the cup and you'll win something and rip the ribbon off of somebody's back. It was good. I think my wife went to like Instagram or TikTok and got all these inspirations for all these holiday games. And
oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. So, and so overall, a good, you know, ate too much, drank too much, but at least now I've gained enough weight where when I lose weight next year, I have goals for that.
That's like writing a list and putting a couple things you've already done just so you can cross them off and feel really good about it.
Exactly. It's these little wins.
Well, we'll get to our goals in a minute.
Why don't we move on to some beauty science news? Right here at the end of the year, what did you see, Valerie?
Big news, and I should say a big Christmas gift to the brand K18. They have sold to Unilever. And while that may not impact consumers today, Perry, you've been part of an acquisition, and actually I think a Unilever acquisition, correct? Hence Unicleaver, is that what they call it?
Well, actually, I had left before Unilever took over my company, but I was part of an acquisition. Alberto Culver had bought another brand called St. Ives.
That's right. And you ended up finding out they actually had no Swiss herbs in the product at the time.
Right. They had no Swiss herbs. So that's what happens. When a big company buys a small company, you have to go through and, you know, you don't get to review all the books before you purchase it. But once you buy it, then you get everything turned over to you. And that was one of the things we found. They claim Swiss herbs, but they were just taking herbs from you know, California or New Jersey or something, but they were calling it Swiss herbs. So we actually had to source the herbs in Switzerland. But there's lots of things that go on. You see formulas that are done a certain way and maybe don't follow the proper rules and things. And so you have to change the formulas sometimes. And that's often what happens.
Also, a brand like Unilever has really incredible buying power. And a small brand like K18, who has probably had their work done through contract manufacturing or consultants, doesn't necessarily have that buying power. So I would imagine some of their suppliers, at least, are going to get validated into the portfolio to leverage that great pricing.
Yeah, and I would imagine that over time, the formulas will be modified in ways that at least Unilever doesn't think are significant, but that'll make it less expensive to create the formula. For example, if they're using, a blend of sterile and acetyl alcohol and they're getting it from a tiny supplier that costs them, you know, $10 a pound, Unilever has got their own supply where they probably get it for $1 a pound, but they might have to change the ratio a little bit.
Exactly. Do you think Unilever is going to come out with their own, we'll call it lesser version of K18, because often what happens, we've talked about it before, is a big brand like L'Oreal, for example, has a premium tier, a prestige tier, and then a mass market tier of the exact same technology. Do you think that will come out?
So you're saying, will there be a suave K18? There might be a suave pond builder. It'll be the J18 from Suave.
But V18, VO18, right?
I'm certain that they would, if there's technology they could leverage with other brands. So what Unilever has, Dove could come out with one. I could see that. Suave does have their salon professional, knockoffs. And I could see something like that. But I also could see the K18 brand not wanting to like cheapen their technology. So they might, not call it, K18 or whatever peptide they're using. But I could see it impacting other brands.
Very cool.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens there and we'll see what about all the news in the coming year. But let's move on to a look back on this year. You know, Valerie, I was looking through our episodes, and it was around April when I think I discovered AI and ChatGPT.
Oh gosh!
And that's when we started to employ some of the AI voices. Or
you say we, but I'm pretty sure I've been against this. But
you have always been against
in general,
this.
The show has employed AI voices.
You know. These things are coming. There's no stopping.
You know, I'm not alone. I think I've had some support from fans.
Oh, sure. I think society in general, there is going to be a certain percentage of people that find this quite distasteful. But, you know, people hated radio, too, when it first came out.
All right.
Well, you know, one of the things that I found AI is very helpful for is it's been able to create transcripts of our show, which makes it that's a nice little feature.
I do appreciate that.
Added those for patrons. But what I did was I took all the transcripts and I fed it into ChatGPT and I said, hey, ChatGPT, what was a show about this year? And this is what it came out with. It said, the Beauty Brains podcast episodes from 2023 focused on addressing various beauty-related questions and scientific insights.
Topics included hair care, particularly salon versus store brand products, effects of chlorine on hair, and hair masks. Skincare discussions covered the impact of ingredients like petrolatum and sunscreen formulations. Misconceptions around cosmetics were clarified, including myths about certain ingredients and product effectiveness. The show also delved into product packaging, formulation aspects, specialized treatments like nanoplasty, and collagen supplements.
Overall, the year emphasized debunking myths, explaining the science behind products and ingredients, and offering practical beauty advice. Could it be any more generic?
I know. I was going to say, how bland. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
It started out okay.
Yeah, but it didn't even mention the porch kitties.
No, very vanilla. This sounds like the heading on a Wikipedia page. That's what this sounds like. And then you're like, wow, okay, this is a recap. It's not, anything distinctual. We are an award-winning podcast, and I'm upset ChatGPT did not reflect that in its vanilla summary.
Well, you know, these AIs, maybe they'll get better in the future, but right now they're pretty, they're pretty bland if you just ask them a general question like that.
Well, not impressed, that's for sure. We'll have to see about next year.
All right, speaking of next year, before we get into questions, why don't we talk about the goals for next year? This year we had 30 episodes. I know last time we said 28, but then we recorded two. So we had 30 by before the end of the year.
So we're a little more than a bi-weekly podcast, which, you know, I think it would be cool to be a weekly podcast. We always start out really good, and then we sort of fall off around summertime.
Well, you know, we travel a lot. Work gets in the way. You move.
Yeah. I got bonked in the head.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
that's right. You had the big car accident.
Yep.
Oh, my God. I guess it was a rough year.
It was not a great year. I feel a little beat up. No. But for next year, we are going to hit the ground running. We are going to give you guys more episodes. And we mean it, because guess what? This is the most motivated we're going to be.
That's right. January is always super motivated. The end of the year. And, you know, I think we can beat 30. Can we get to 52? Maybe.
Well, don't we get 2 weeks vacation?
Oh, yeah, 2 weeks vacation. So 50.
All right, that's the goal. 50 episodes.
We could pre-record, and then, but, you know, a little batch processing. That's what all the goal people say to do. So, okay, that's our big goal for next year. You know, we didn't do a Patreon event. In a couple of years, we've done, you know, like a one-hour Patreon hangout. Maybe we'll try that again next year.
We really, at least once a quarter, we do. Because without our patrons, we would not be able to support the basic costs that it takes to run a podcast.
Exactly. And, you know, those AI tools are not cheap.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wait. Now they're free.
Okay. Okay.
They won't be next year.
The quality we've been getting, it better be free.
Yes, they're free. So we hope to do that once a quarter. You know what else I want to do in the new year? And it's been on my to-do list forever. It's update the website.
Yep.
Like, before, the website used to be sort of the main hub, and then the podcast was sort of attached to that. Now the podcast is really it, and we kind of ignored the website. But a redesign of the website is in order, and will be coming next year. But you'll certainly hear about it.
Well, on our first episode of the new year, we'll actually talk about the goals we have for 2024, and maybe that will help us be a little more accountable, because we will have publicly stated them. And I will keep a spreadsheet as well. That's actually a really good idea.
All right. Excellent idea. All right. Let's move on to some questions. First question comes to us from Marianne. Marianne's asked a few questions, and she says, "Hi, Valerie and Perry. I'm listening to episode 350, where Perry is talking about how much he loves vitamin C." Sorry if you talked about this before, but I was curious what you both think of coenzyme Q10 and how it compares to vitamin C or its derivatives. Is it comparable, or is it just a different category? Feels like it falls into antioxidants, and that always confuses me. I wonder if there are some better ones than other ones, or do they work in different ways? So, like, does one antioxidant work against a specific oxidant and another against another oxidant? Sorry, I realized I squeezed multiple questions in there. Anyway, thank you for all your insights and light. I appreciate the help. All right, Valerie, coenzyme Q10.
Yeah, have you heard of this before?
Of course. You know, this was the work. I did some patent work on coenzyme Q10.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, here's what I have. Coenzyme Q10 was a thing in one of our products. And my boss, Henry, said, there's a patent on our product. So can you find something about coenzyme Q10 and another ingredient in this formula that we can patent? And he's like, I don't really care what it is. We just want to put the word patent on there.
Oh,
so just do something.
Goodness.
So I took coenzyme Q10 and hydroxyethyl cellulose, and I just used them in different ratios. And I found that at one ratio, you can make a little glob that bounces.
Okay. Oh, that's right.
Versus another. Yeah. Yes. Now, it went to patent pending, so we just put patent pending on the formula. It never went through, but that's just the shenanigans that go on in this. So that was my real experience with coenzyme Q10. Nothing really to do with how does it affect skin.
Well, it's interesting because there is not a whole lot of literature out there in terms of specific skin benefits. There was one paper in 2009 in a journal called Biofactors where they researchers looked at aging skin and the impact that coenzyme Q10 had on it. And they basically said topical application of CoQ10 is beneficial for human skin. And they say that's because CoQ10 is responsible in our mitochondria's function in the cells. Our mitochondria are basically the energy powerhouses of our cells. So they're responsible for basically making the cellular currency of the cell and keeping things powered and moving. And CoQ10...
You know, the mitochondria is my it's my favorite cellular organelle.
I do like it, too. It looks like a little kidney.
It was actually hypothesized that mitochondria was its own organism and it got eaten by the eukaryotic cells. And now it's been a symbiotic relationship for the rest of its existence.
Are we hosts then?
We're the hosts.
We're the parasitic host of the mitochondria. Anyway, CoQ10 is an important cofactor in the series of chemical reactions that occurs within the mitochondria. And so these researchers have said aging is an aerobic process, and CoQ10 is an important factor in this molecular pathway, and therefore topical application is very beneficial. But then there's a whole bunch of other papers saying, well, coenzyme Q10 is difficult to get into the skin. So one paper looked at topical delivery of a CoQ10 loaded microemulsion for skin regeneration. This was a paper out of Korea in an open access journal in 2020. And they say topical administration of CoQ10 is great, but difficult to penetrate the skin. So we need to explore other mechanisms. There's another paper that says, well, let's look at the HLB number of vitamins like vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10 and their derivatives and how well they transport into the skin. And it turns out CoQ10 doesn't transport into the skin very well at all. It has a hydrophobic property that it doesn't like. But when you reduce it to a different form, it has a hydrophilic property and it goes into skin much better than CoQ10. Except the problem is that's not the form we're putting into skincare, right? So it's really hard to say if there's any realized value out of CoQ10. I think there's a lot of literature out there saying, you know, it's good for us because it is an antioxidant. It helps with oxidative stress, which is something we know very well about in skincare. It's why we use antioxidants. But how it compares to vitamin C, I think, is a hard comparison because that's not, while it's an antioxidant, that's not really the main function of coenzyme Q10. It's really responsible for being a part of the electron transport chain within mitochondria, although it is an antioxidant, whereas vitamin C, its primary function is to be an antioxidant.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So when you're talking about are antioxidants different, they are different and they affect different things. Vitamin C specifically quenches the free radicals that are created by UV radiation coming into the skin, whereas coenzyme Q10... really, the main benefit of it is to hop into the mitochondria and help with the energy production of the cell. The fact that it doesn't get down into the skin, because there aren't mitochondria sitting on the top of your skin, they're all down into the dermis.
In the living cells.
And if it's not getting down to the dermis, it's really just a showy ingredient. You know, I was thinking of some analogy, and I thought about that. You know how, like, you give a dog a milk bone, they love milk bones,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
They treats, right? Okay, so if you imagine coenzyme Q10 is the treat and the dog is like the cell where it's going to benefit, imagine trying to put a treat through a solid wall to the dog on the other side. And that's what it's like, right? Because it's not going to get there. So even though it would be great for the dog, it's never going to penetrate the wall, just like the coenzyme Q10 is never going to penetrate the skin to get to the mitochondria where it wants to be.
Very interesting analogy, but you're not wrong. And the other thing is antioxidants do have very differing antioxidant capacity, for sure. Ascorbic acid is a great antioxidant, but it reacts so quickly, it's hard for it to have any longevity, especially in the amount of time it takes for it to get to down to the skin. Same thing with tocopherol and tocopherol acetate. One is better for the skin because it is in an ester form, and this is, you know, what the documents say. It has to dissociate into free tocopherol in order to have any value, and that takes time, so it's not as quick reacting. But it also means that it's not going to protect from oxidants in your formulation, and that's why you would use tocopherol, because it's more in its active form already. So there are differences in that aspect, but again, whether or not it makes a difference, it's kind of hard to say.
So what's your verdict on coenzyme Q10? Love it? List it?
Well, I would say it's probably better orally, because there is a lot more evidence when CoQ10 is ingested about benefits on your cardiovascular system, which, you know, I would say is probably a bigger benefit than your skin.
It's a good story ingredient. You know, I love my enzymes, but yeah, I don't think this one can actually get to where it needs to go to have a big impact. All right, next question. Valerie, look who this is from.
Superfan Timothy. Hi, Beauty Brains. I'm curious about how depilatory agents work. Can you explain them? Also, I came across this study that says depilatory agents cause an increase in hair follicles, but I just don't understand how that's possible. Would you be willing to comment on this? Thanks so much, Timothy.
Depilatory? You say depilatory?
I guess I do. What do you say?
Depilatory?
Well, there's no double L, so to me it can't be a short I. Pill is P-I-L-L, right?
That's a good point, but I've always called it depilatory.
So. Does it matter? Because I'm not sure how often these are used anymore.
Really? People don't like to, nair their legs anymore?
Well, the smell is terrible because you need these really high pH agents that are going to reduce the hair fiber and break those double bonds. And that releases a sulfurous type odor to the product, because you're using these high sulfur compounds like glycolates in order to do that.
Yeah, so that's exactly how they work. The depilatories or depilatories. It'll be interesting to, we should poll the audience, like, see who says what. Is it tomato, tomato?
I literally have no idea.
Depilatory or depilatory?
How this is going to pan out.
Essentially, they work by breaking down the protein structure, like you said, and it's all about the thioglycolate. Hey, isn't that the same thing used in,
Perms.
Perms?
Yeah, it's the same compound because it breaks those double bonds within the hair fiber and essentially allows the hair to break down and dissolve away.
Yeah, and so then if it's on your leg, you just, like, can wipe it away because you've broken down the hair. Now, that does sound a little harsh on the skin, though. Does it break down the skin, too?
Well, I would imagine it helps break some of the skin, or at least not necessarily exfoliate it in the way that an AHA exfoliates, but I'm sure it helps slough off some of the dead skin on the outer layers.
Yeah, which is why you don't want to leave it on there for too long. So
no. Mm-mm.
Right. So anyway, that's how these depilatories work. But let's move on to this paper, right? All right, the title of the paper is a bit misleading. It says, depilatory creams increase the number of hair follicles and dermal fibroblasts expressed interleukin-6 tumor necrosis factor alpha and tumor necrosis factor beta in mouse skin. I'm like, thanks, Timothy. What is this all about?
Yeah, so basically, Timothy, what are you doing in your free time?
I know, what are you reading there? But I looked into this, and this paper, the title is a little misleading because it clearly in the title says that
it increases the number of hair follicles.
Exactly. And I said, that's not exactly what's going on here. They don't actually increase the number of hair follicles. What it does is it increases the number of hair follicles that are in the anagen phase, and that's the growth phase, versus the telogen phase, which is the resting phase. So it doesn't actually make new hair follicles.
You know what this is, Perry? This is probably a case of the paper publisher saying your title of depilatory creams increase the number of hair follicles in the anagen phase over the telogen phase is a little bit too long. So we're going to have to trim that. So they said, let's make it a little more exciting. It increases the number of hair follicles. Boom. Done.
Right. But that would be amazing if it did that, because that would like change your biology, right? I mean, I guess it kind of is changing the biology, even just changing what phase the follicle is, but actually creating new hair follicles, that would be like revolutionary. So no, that's not what's happening.
Well, it would be contradictory, wouldn't it? Because you're getting rid of the hair to create new hair follicles.
Well, yeah, and it is, I mean, it is a little bit contradictory what is actually going on in this study, because you're right, depilatories are meant to remove hair, and they do that. But what the study found was that the ingredients, the thioglycolates, actually must kick off some sort of indicator or clock or something in the hair follicles that switches it from the telogen phase to the anagen phase, which is the growing phase. Now, to understand this a little bit better, let's talk about hair follicles. You see, hair follicles go through these various stages of growth, so hair grows a certain length of time, mm-hmm. and then it just stops. And then that growing phase is called the anagen phase. It's also, you know, why you try to grow your hair out and it just like stops at a certain point. Like, I've always tried to grow my hair all the way down to my butt, and it just never happens.
Well, the point where it stops is called the telogen phase. So this is a resting phase.
And it can stay in the telogen phase for a long time, but eventually it just sort of snaps out of that, and then that hair falls out, mm-hmm. and then it just starts growing over again, starts the anagen phase. So in this study, what they did is that they slathered two different types of depilatories on the skin of mice. Then they apply it over the course of a few days and weeks. And then there's a control section where they did nothing, and another control section where they shaved the skin, the hair off the skin. Then they kill the mice and look at the hair follicles under a microscope.
Did they have to do that?
I guess so. So they count the number of follicles in the anagen phase, you know, and these look a little larger. They're deeper in the skin. There's more layers of cells around them. And it turns out the sections where the depilatory was applied, more follicles were in the anagen phase. You know, interestingly, you know, there's always that myth, does shaving increase the thickness of your hair and such? Well, for the shaving and the control sites, there was no increase in the anagen phase of follicles, so it had no impact on the follicle at all.
Well, if you're wondering who would do this study, it was a collaboration of authors from different institutes of medicine and departments of cosmetic science at different universities.
You know what is interesting, though? I'm part of the IFSCC and the SEC. A paper like this would never be allowed to be presented at a meeting.
Because they killed the mice.
Yeah, we're all about no animal testing. So you can't do animal testing like this. So where does this go to, like the dermatology or something?
Well, I think so. I'm going to guess so. That's what its interest is for. Although there was a Department of Cosmetic Science scientist involved, and I'm wondering if maybe, because, you know, medical doctors and dermatologists don't necessarily know the science behind how to make a depilatory cream. Maybe that's where their involvement was. But my real question is, was this just something they were curious about? Or is this a real need of discovery? You know, who was funding this study? Because at the end of the day, would a consumer notice a difference is my first thought on whether or not their hair was growing more quickly, or did they simply hear the old adage like, oh, when you shave your hair, it grows back faster? And they were like, no, we're going to prove that that doesn't happen. And it was a matter of curiosity. Like, what's the why?
I think they're looking at these depilatory agents to promote hair growth because it's paradoxical, really.
Yeah.
But I would say, as I saw this, I'm like, what, does using a depilatory actually promote hair growth? And if it is increasing the follicles that are in the growing stage, maybe it does that. But it's on such a microscopic layer. I was thinking of this. Imagine there's 1,000 hair follicles that are growing, right? And then you convert 100 more to, that's like 10% more. Are people going to notice 1,000 versus 1,100 hair follicles growing? I don't think so. So
no.
And it doesn't actually increase the speed of hair growth. It's just that, I guess it would increase the density of the hair growth, but not in any sort of consumer noticeable way. So yeah, I wonder, what did these poor mice sacrifice themselves for in the study? I'm not sure it was terribly beneficial. But don't blame the cosmetic industry. We didn't fund this.
Yeah.
Right?
All the poor mice.
And plus, you know, the other thing is, just because something happened in mice does not mean it's going to also happen in humans. So keep that in mind.
Well, I'm going to end the year being really sad. That's a terrible study.
Oh, no. You're not going to be really sad, because we'll end up with a fun question.
All right. Let's hear it.
BJ actually tipped me off to this podcast, How to Be Fined. I'd never heard it before, so I took a listen because they were covering the question, do you need to shower daily for the protection of your personal biome and the planet? And is it true that ABCC11, body odor, and earwax connections favors Asian? Thank you, BJ. So I listened to the whole podcast. It was fun. Two girls talking about whether you need to shower every day.
Was it opinion or science-based? Because...
It's kind of opinion.
All right. Well, here's my opinion. No, you do not need to shower daily for the protection of your personal biome. I actually think for my skin, showering daily is very hard on it because I have very dry skin. I don't produce a lot of oil. And showering daily leaves my skin very dry, very itchy, even if I moisturize afterwards. So I find I'm best with like every other day or every third day. Now, that doesn't mean you don't clean up the right areas, right? But
sure. Yeah.
As far as like submersion in water, that's an every second day or every third day type thing.
Yeah, and I was formerly a shower every single day, and sometimes twice, because I would shower before work and then I'd work out at lunchtime and then I'd shower after working out.
Oh my goodness.
So yes, but now that I work at home, I've steadily gone less and less. And now it's, if I'm going out, yes, I'm going to shower. But if I don't leave the house.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, showering consumes a lot of water. I had, in my previous lab, one of my sinks actually had water input, but it didn't have a drain. So we had to collect all the water in a 5-gallon bucket and then dump it out as it filled. And that stuff fills up very fast. So, and just washing lab dishes. And I'm, you know, I hardly use any water because I'm very cautious with that technique. But imagine being in a shower. Sometimes I'm in the shower 10 or 15 minutes because I use it to warm up my back muscles, because I like my shower water burning hot. I am emptying that hot water heater. Anyway, it uses a lot of water. And filling up that 5-gallon bucket, when you have to dump it, it's like, wow, this is a lot of water that's just like wasted for what, right? Same with the shower. So I would say, for protection of the planet, when a lot of communities are in a drought crisis of fresh water, I would say, probably skip the daily shower and you'll be fine.
Right. And as far as the personal biome goes, you know, whether you shower or not shower, I don't think it has a long-term effect. It'll have a temporary effect, certainly, when you, you know, wash down everything, you pretty much reset your whole biome, but they all come back, you know?
Yeah.
So I think the whole microbiome is a little overplayed.
I think it's not understood.
Right. Overplayed and misunderstood, or not understood. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. How about this last part, this connection between the ABCC11 gene and earwax and body odor? And I hadn't heard of this.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I had not. You've heard
of
this.
I do recall this. This was a long time ago, maybe like 15 years ago or so, 10 or 15. And they found a gene responsible for production of earwax. And basically your earwax can either be like on the wetter side or on the drier side.
Right.
And in European and African descendants, it's a little bit... the predominant form is the wet form. And in East Asians, the dry form is predominant. Whereas if you're in Southern or Central Asia, it's very mixed. And so scientists said, well, could DNA play a role because it is geographically so split up? And by looking at the DNA, they actually identified the gene responsible for producing really dry or really wet earwax. And turns out,
which is the ABCC11 gene.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how they name these things, to be honest.
I don't either.
We call it the dry earwax gene.
Right. And according to this, there was a paper published called A Functional ABCC11 Allele is Essential in the Biochemical Formation of Human Axillary Odor. So someone specifically looked at that.
Oh, wow.
And they found that this gene plays a role in producing the protein that transports the various molecules like earwax components and odor-related compounds in sweat. And there is a single nucleotide polymorphism, a SNP, in this gene that is associated with your earwax type. So just a single nucleotide difference in the gene either gives you dry earwax or wet earwax. And the same SNP is associated with body odor intensity and particularly in the underarms. And so that correlation between your genetics of this certain gene is also sort of correlated with body odor production. So if you have this, if you have the dry earwax gene, you theoretically produce less body odor.
Are you in the 3%, Perry? The 3% of Europeans who have dry earwax?
I am not. I have a moisty earwax that, and I produce a lot of it.
I'm a prolific earwax producer as well. I actually have to get it professionally removed, and I've had to do that my whole life because it just really built. I actually put one drop of sesame oil in my ears a couple times a week, and that helps prevent it from compacting, but it's so sticky and dense, it does not move out of my ears.
Well, I've thought of starting my own candle line.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that's a lot of wax. I don't have that much wax. That's a lot. I think it's too soft for a candle.
Probably, yeah, probably. I'd have to, you know, chemically modify it a little bit. But you could probably harden it up with a little plasticizer.
A little beeswax. Beeswax and earwax.
Are you saying none of our fans are going to want to buy a Perry personalized earwax
candle? It's probably a little too dark in color.
That's probably, yeah. Speaking of dark in color, do you hear that music?
I do. That's the tinkering of the plumbers fixing up my hot water heater, so I got to get out of here.
Well, sounds like a great time to leave. Thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks for listening all year long.
Yes, we really appreciate your listenership, writing in with very positive comments. We don't appreciate negative comments, but I haven't gotten any, but I wouldn't appreciate them anyway, so...
Yeah, and I try not to read them because I'm so insecure.
Well, if you get a chance, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us those great reviews. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
And speaking of questions, if you have a question and you want to get your voice on the show, just record it on your smartphone and email it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. Also, if you like what we do and you want to support the show, we are on Patreon, so go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe. You get also, not only do you get your questions prioritized in the way we answer them, we also get a transcript of every show.
And you will be prioritized in 2024 even more with patron-exclusive events.
All right, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. That's another goal we have, is to be more active on these in the new year, except for TikTok. We don't need that. Follow us on Instagram at TheBeautyBrains2018. On X, we're at TheBeautyBrains, and we have a Facebook page.
And we do have TikTok, but we'll see if we do anything in the next
year. We've been saying that for a year. Oh, gosh.
Well, Valerie, it's great seeing you. I have had a lot of fun recording this whole year and looking forward to the new year.
Yay, I'll get to see you next year, Perry. Well, thanks again for listening, everybody. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone. Kittens.
Benito and Blue share some loving news. He mises under bushes, yeah, he's laying low, waiting for the moment to steal Puffer's show. Porch kitties living life free and wild, each one's got their own style, ain't no docile child. From dawn to dusk, they're claiming their
the scene, eating everyone's food. Man, he's just so mean. He buys and steps up, says, hey, that's not cool. They wrestle and tussle, breaking all the rules. Porch kitties living life free and wild. Each one's got their own style. He ain't no docile child. From dawn to dusk, they're claiming their space. And then Chicago backyard is their own dang place. Porch kitties living life free and wild. Each one's got their own style. He ain't no docile child. From dawn to dusk.